This is a production of Cornell University.
All right, we're going to go ahead and call the meeting to order. I didn't use a gavel, so I feel better about that. It's 12:15, so if everyone could please take their seats, we'd appreciate that. We'll call the, what's today, the November 5th meeting to order here at 12:15 p.m. Any late additions to the agenda? All right, seeing none. I'd like to now put the Wednesday, October 15th minutes up for approval.
Motion to approve.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any dissent? All right, seeing none, the minutes of the October 15th are approved. So for business of the day, just wanted to recap the President's address. I appreciate everybody's efforts, who was there, who helped either pick up the apples, pull the food together, just showed up, wore their red, did their part. Just want to thank everybody for being there. I apologize I couldn't be there. I really wanted to. But it just conflicted. So I was there though, sort of too, in spirit with my big head on the screen.
Did you have that picture? We took a little picture, group picture at the end. Did you see that?
I haven't yet.
It's on whose phone was that now?
No, I know, they're cool.
Hazel has one and Virgil has one as well too. So you can skip those.
If you guys could send those around, that would be great. Great stuff for Facebook or the newsletter, things like that. Any other thoughts, recap President's address? One of the things we're trying to do is sort of memorialize the process, make it easier year after year.
I just had one question that when the Mary Opperman Award came up, a lot of people didn't understand what the award was for that President Skorton received. When I said it was the Mary Opperman Award, they didn't understand.
It was the Employee Appreciation Award.
Appreciation Award, yeah.
Well, they didn't hear what the award was.
I'll take that a little bit. So as I was reading what the award was, at the moment I said, like, we'd like to put the word to Skorton, as I tried to read what it said, there was just lots of clapping, I didn't want to, like, speak over the entire thing. Yeah. So I will take that one. I kind of looked at him like, I can't read this anymore. Just, you're here. We'll just hand it to you. That's part of that.
So one comment that can make I always find that anything that we try to say after the president is done with the address, everybody's like, I'm done.
Yeah.
And they're going. So that's why we, in the past, intentionally done it first, so that we don't
I think next year we can absolutely. I think the nature of him this year.
Yeah.
The other thing, too, is I think maybe if we put a little blurb in the program, because if you notice, the program was different than years past, slightly different, we can put... something in there. What?
Please stay over again.
Yeah, exactly. What other feedback?
Also, if you read the description of the award before you announce who it goes to, it helps because that will gain people's attention.
Like, yeah.
Ooh, that's kind of cool. Who's it going to? And glorious applause.
All good feedback.
I will also address that one. Sorry to, like, do that. So as we were kind of talking, President Skorton actually wanted to leave earlier. So he wanted to leave right as he was done. So I kind of just made sure that he stayed. Otherwise, he was about to walk. He's like, I have to be walking by this time, like, out the door or something, whatever came up. So.
Because it was pretty quick. We were done.
It was very quick. I'm not sure what the nature was, but again, he's like, I need to leave exactly at the time here. So another reason why I just kind of said, hey, it's to you, so please don't walk out the door before I have nothing to hand to a person. But I think, that is good feedback. It was just reading all the things before the announcement itself.
So outside of the award, any other logistical...
Outside of the award, I think you did great.
Very well.
And her other comment was,
and there's no chips.
She loves chips.
She wanted chips. Chips for Mary next year.
Yeah. We're happy to offer chips. But so I did speak with Sherry, the catering, the management board with, and said, you know, that next year when we're thinking about. So I'm just making the note for whoever may be the person in charge of catering to make sure that we do have a vegan, gluten free, because the gluten free bread apparently has milk in it.
The bread?
Okay.
Yeah.
They said no eggs. They said only milk. So I called in some person with them, and they went to the ingredients for me, and they said it had milk in it. So
okay.
A little catering detail.
Yeah.
Were the numbers down? Did you notice a lot of meals left over compared to years past?
Yeah, so we had, I think it was like high twos, low threes. Mm-hmm. There's sort of a fluctuating count of like 286 to 310 in that sort of range, mm-hmm. plus or minus. Plus we had 160 something views on the live stream. So Gina and I think, is it David? David is working or helped Gina sort of mine the IP addresses to okay. see where their location was.
Yeah.
To see if it was Ithaca, because that morning I had sent an email to New York City Tech Campus with that staff list. And then also we had the folks in Geneva that watch. And I think, what did we have there? 20 or something?
Roughly 20, and they, again, super appreciative of.
So they had lunch. They had.
So we do have an analysis of the IP.
Gina has that data, but I just don't know what it is. If it's Ithaca campus, if it's New York City, if it was Geneva, or.
I sent it out to that college as well to get people to watch, and I did get comments later on because I went with a box of apples and handed out to everyone who couldn't get out, and I had some. Oh, we saw the live stream.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to see what.
So I think, you know, if we decided to do that again, which I think we should, I think we maybe should look at size of the venue, or where or how we do it. And, you know, I think next year with Beth Garrett and in her first year, it'll be Bailey worthy. But I think, you know, it might be more conducive to. I mean, that's such a grand space that unless it's full, can look, you know, cavernous. So, any other feedback on President's Address content? You want to talk about content for a minute?
Well, I'm thinking about the distributed areas, like Geneva and Europe, and it does look like we did a lot of people here. We may want to think about funding those common viewing rooms in those locations that staff can go to, where maybe we can spend at least cooking rooms.
So we did that in Geneva.
Yeah,
so Geneva, they had 20 people in one room, and I think Gemma went out and
got the food,
and then we reimbursed the food, or is that how that worked?
Yeah.
It was like the meeting before. It was like, oh, we'll email Geneva, share the live stream, and then get them some food. It was just, we just sort of made the decision. So,
Do you think that, and it would be interesting to see who the vacant physically come to, because it almost makes me wonder it might make sense to choose a couple places on campus that we could also have. So, for example, out at the Park where the trays are, maybe finding a common room there because it's kind of hard to find parking coming up.
Sure. Yeah, how do we make it more accessible?
I think is the
question. Sure.
We did bring that up, remember, at the when we were discussing getting Geneva some food and doing the live link, we discussed that same point, and Eric had thought about it because it was something even last year brought up. At that point, I think some of the executive board were more in the mindset, let's try to get physical numbers for the last one for Sporting instead of suddenly creating these distant locations. So, and I don't know if we should aim for that then for the first one for Garrett, but, you know.
I was going to suggest that maybe with Garrett being new, we suggest maybe during fall break. Like trying to like really like encourage a date where we know there's not students necessarily here, so we can get maybe a greater number, even though I don't think the dining hall might be open. So it might be, but I'm just trying to figure out like a more.
But regardless of when we do it at lunchtime,
yeah.
You're never, we're excluding 300 and some employees just based on the nature of their work. You know, we're not excluding them intentionally, but that time
yeah.
prevents them from necessarily leaving their post. The students are.
Well, no, staff too, because I mean, that's still.
It was later this year too.
Yeah. But
last
part of the ad drop period.
It's been around this yeah. time. I mean, it's gone everywhere from the beginning of October until
yeah.
the middle of November. We've had it one year.
So our first point of order is making sure that President-elect Garrett will do one. which is, I'm sure she will, but it will be her choice at first. And I don't think we will have a problem with that, because if we do it, I think we'll be able to legislate through that a little bit. So I'm sure we'll have one. But I just think working through the logistics with her, you know, and it might be something too, is to craft a resolution saying, you know, we would like this to be an every year annual memorialized, you know, not optional sort of program.
It's not?
I think it is.
That's what I was going to say.
You were doing them. Amy, when did they start doing them?
I mean, if it's not concrete in the legislature, then obviously I think we should, but I mean, I would have thought it was.
I was going to say, I think that might be it, is that it's just practice, so it's always been done, but.
Okay.
But it could stop. It
could stop.
Oh, yeah.
So
I don't know why it would, but it could. Pardon? And it could look different.
Yeah.
So I think we should maybe try to memorialize that here during a transition period. Any recap on content?
That was me
yeah.
reading
yeah.
off people's questions,
yeah.
and Scott would say, "You have a lot of questions." And I said, "These are all from the staff."
I think having that last year was really helpful when we had that awkward pause, and I think David's really good about filling
yeah.
the awkward silence and weeding it out. But we don't know
sure.
what will come next year, so it might be good for us to just put that in our process
a month before, maybe
yeah,
start cutting something out. Yeah, yeah,
because we could get these new questions.
I just have a question for you. You're with the Sun.
Yes.
Are you writing a story today, or?
That's what they want.
Okay, just a story on an EA meeting.
Okay.
Our next EA meeting is going to be probably more robust with the President and Glenn Alschuler and the Vice President of Human Resources. Today is really just. More internal chatter, which you're probably picking up on. So you're welcome. Feel free. I don't want to stop the independent process, but just to give you a heads up, there's not going to be much
excitement today.
So much newsworthy. But we appreciate you being here. Yeah.
I mean, it was nice you made a stand.
Yeah, stand to be recognized. Yeah, we were trying to figure out how can we fit all of the content, because that takes up a lot. So with doing that, we have to either eliminate certain things or go to a bigger program or have a one sheet insert that's inside
yeah,
the fold.
I can't remember.
It's front and back.
Mm-hmm.
So we can absolutely figure that out.
Or even just the executive email or something like that, just so that they've got that piece of information.
Yeah. Any other thoughts on President's address?
Maybe this is better to wait until we talk about honoring it. I know we've had spoken about possibly doing an address, which is great. So I just want to put it out there to make sure that we do discuss it.
Okay, moving on. Unless anybody had anything else on the topic. The economic impact study. Right? Fun. Exciting. So this was put together in conjunction with Gary Stewart and then Mina Amundsen, who's the Director of Capital Budget and Integrative Planning. Fun title. So one of the things that came up at our leadership breakfast is because the staff population ranges a broad spectrum of backgrounds, education levels, all sorts of things that we have to consider in as large a population as we have, is how will this information to the masses be internalized, interpreted, understood by the broad range of employees that we represent. Some may find it fascinating, some may find it impossible to understand, some may think that when it says, you know, Cornell's impact is 3.some billion in the city, does that mean they're writing $3.2 billion in check to the city? So wanted to put it out to this board to see if we could help, you know, Joel Molina and Gary and Mina in messaging about the impact study, maybe creating some questions in advance so that we could give to Gary, then invite Gary to come and present to us formally so that we can be versed on the topic if anyone has any questions. So that's sort of the background context for this discussion, but just wanted to sort of put it out there for who had a chance to read it, you know, what questions that came up. Ready, go.
So I did take the time to read it. If anyone can fill me in where exactly the amount that we get from federal funding being a land grant institution, I didn't see that highlighted anywhere in here, and I understand that it is matched by state. I think they need to start off with the definition of what a land grant university is and what it has to fill, which is supposed to be practical agricultural science, military sciences, and engineering. I don't know if that's evolved, you know, since these laws were made in 1987 and 1914. But I do know that they have to have ag experimental stations, which they're very happy to mention Geneva at least 25 times in here, if not more. But I see Geneva as dying from our last visit, as far as employees and their funding shrinking. So if Cornell could do something to help sustain them in addition to the grants that they get independently for hiring and stuff, I think that's an important part. I read a lot about the tech campus in New York City, and I don't think the tech campus in New York City is a appropriate alternative to the experimental field station in Geneva. I see that upstate town is dying, and I don't think New York City needs any more stimulus. New York City grows very well on its own. That's one thing that a few things that I took away from reading that.
Okay. All good things. There's no...
So, I like your idea of the question and answer, because that would give you, you know, a chance to hone in on certain things and go into them in depth. I wrote the article that went in the Chronicle. I can't even remember whether we put it in the pocket or not, or whether we just referred to it in the website. You would not believe the number of approvals that had to go through to get that article out. So the question and answer and having someone here present provides a more informal kind of process, so that you don't have to go through what I do.
We don't have to go through that.
I was just throwing it out there. I'm wondering if we should consider advertising that meeting a little bit more. It seems like there would just be a lot of interest from folks to actually hear the presentation. And
yeah, absolutely. I don't see why. Why not?
You know, we want engagement, and I think we do a really good job at a lot of things. But I just, in the meeting, some of the meetings, just meeting for people to know about and if they can make it, I'm sure we're going to have a lot of interest.
Well, I think it's a complex conversation that a lot of people have in their micro communities about, you know, what does Cornell do, what does Cornell not do, how do they do it, how do they not do it, and I think it's, again, it's probably like the budget model, right? We could probably debunk some of these myths that exist. We could probably create more concrete fuel to some people's passions about certain things. So I think that there's, it's a great thing to try to market this meeting. So we'll definitely try to do that. We can, I don't know if we need another room or if we want to try to fill this room first.
I mean, if we get, you know, 10 more people coming.
Yeah, that's winning, yeah. Right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
That'd be a good one to have
staff
in Geneva, too.
And I'm wondering if, because we've now had Paul and we had Paul.
And
it seems like we've almost got a series going. I'm wondering if there's a way of just marketing this as a particular kind. It's not just an EA meeting that's going to have so-and-so, but this is part of our ongoing, so that it sets it.
Like an employee roundtable.
Yeah.
You know, I would want to steer away from presentation because I don't want us to be sort of this rubber stamp body, but have us have that engagement and the dialogue and that conversation around topic. So I think maybe we can think of a cool word or something to call that, but more of a round tail type discussion. Other comments from the report?
I was also thrilled we kept it formulated as in-house by the faculty and students in the Department of City and Regional Planning.
Page,
rather than having it farmed out to pay someone a huge amount of money to
do an analysis.
I think we should do a lot more of that.
There was, I forget what they were mentioning, but I think it was the professor who, when you look at our dollars spent into the community and then how that flows through other parts of the community, you know, if we spend money here, then they spend money there. That model, I think, is a Nobel Prize winning, like a Nobel Prize in economics this professor won for this exact model. So it's great that we have that tool and that resource here in-house.
Yep. Lots of variables for the simple SAM model.
Anything else?
Michelle, did you want to know how many, what federal, the dollar amount?
Yeah.
10.7 million.
And then, it does have it matched by state.
Representative funding, and then it talks about the match. It says total funding from three sources being government agencies, et cetera, $37,177,000.
So, I mean, that's just in a footnote.
Yeah.
I'd put it in the first paragraph. Mm-hmm. I think they're really lucky as the major fulfilling aspect of being a land grant university is to have Cornell Cooperative Extension that's run mainly by volunteers. So what a profitable business model for them.
Any thoughts on how staff will perceive this or understand it, internalize it? Any thoughts around that topic? Does it matter? To staff? Should it matter?
Talk about that point. It says it receives $10.7 million to support the efforts of providing and administering extension work. I didn't know if that was the total amount of funds that they got.
Yeah, that I don't know.
That would mean it's only several funding for the university.
Probably like $450 million.
Right. So that never appeared in here. Yeah.
But that's with. And grants. Yeah.
And I wasn't totally clear when they had 53% of the money is spent on salaries, if that included faculty or if it's just staff.
No, I think it's all
of everyone.
Yeah.
Craig, do we know how this information is being disseminated to other staff members?
Yeah.
Like, honestly, I don't know if I would have really known about it had you not mailed it to me.
Yeah. So I know Chronicle, it's been in the Sun, it's been it's a couple of different conversations around campus. I think unless you sort of look every day, you're not going to see it. But are there things in, what I think I'm trying to get at is, are there things in here that staff should know? Or is this something that even the employee community should care about? And that's what I'm trying to get at.
I think it's part of our job to figure out a way to get that message across. But yeah, you really need to know this stuff. It's important to know and very helpful.
Well, we
hear. And how does it relate to the everyday employee?
Yeah.
How does this affect you? I think that's what we really need to focus on.
It has to be related to them, and that they have to be able to relate to it. If you just hand that same booklet to employees, they're not going to read through it, they're not going to have a chance to look at it and understand why they should even look at it.
So this is why this was sent to everybody on the EA, was to get how did we relate to it? How did we react to it? How can we take what we felt as a representative cross-section of the employee population and in turn give that to the people who are sending this message to better help our constituents understand what this is? Because I don't think everyone should read this.
Right.
I think it's sort of a waste for everyone. But what are those things in here? And if we're not ready to have the discussion today, that's fine. Just spend some more time with it if you want. But I do think that this is an important discussion because town gown, community impact, this is essentially Cornell's representation of how they make an impact on where you live, where your children, where your families, where all of the important things in your life are. This is how they say we make an impact in that. So,
and before the next
yeah.
We also heard rumors like that they're going to sell off the property that has the apple orchards in Lansing. Did anyone else hear these rumors? And
yeah.
Then they're closing down the sheep farms and they're going to eliminate the swine facility and stuff like that. And as an agricultural information center, to lose those things when a lot of small organic farms and everything are coming online that we all like to buy from, I think we're kind of getting out of balance.
Which are all great questions, you know, and different parts of campus will have different reactions to this. And so that's what I'm trying to get at. So I think just based on the good discussion so far, but I think we can have a more richer, robust discussion at some other point. Or if you feel more comfortable sharing some thoughts via email, I would just ask that we do take the time to really dive into this a little bit and see, you know, what are the top three things that I took away as a staff member that either created more confusion, brought more clarity, or I just didn't understand? And if we can sort of approach it that way, that I think will be helpful because I think this is important information to communicate, which rarely gets communicated to staff. And that's what I'm trying to get at, is how can we be that conduit of good, robust information sharing?
I was just talking about the Chronicle article. I basically took all of that and condensed it to like 700 words. So
can you forward the Chronicle article to the group?
Nancy wins an award today.
Yes,
there's a lot of.
Nancy got a Nobel Prize for simplification.
It took a lot to try to get that number of pages and those kind of concepts down to something that is that was manageable, and so I think yes, I'm glad to send the email link so that people can get to that and maybe use that as a starting point before you have to deal with the whole thing.
So there's no deadline we have to follow, but if we could maybe extend the 11/5 by another week and have it be what's a week from the 5th, which is today. We got at 7, so that's what, 12? So the 12th, if we could buy the 12th, maybe spend some time, and if everybody could just try to email BJ and I so we can compile these things, I think that would be helpful. All right, so moving on, if everyone is in agreement, talk about the housing study. There was some confusion in our meeting with Mary yesterday about the housing study. Yeah, yep. So the survey that went out to staff talking about housing. So that's my question. Some staff. Okay. So Mary's direction was that it go to all staff.
Oh.
I didn't get it. BJ didn't get it. So who got it?
There was a follow-up communication that said it was only going to randomly selected staff.
Yeah.
That came after Mary's original communication.
So Mary's instruction was all staff.
Interesting.
Where that got missed is somebody else's answer to. But she was, and I want everybody to know, on the record, she was adamant that she wanted all staff to have the opportunity. She said, if we get a random sampling, we may not get the people who really have something important to say. You know, Curtis has been talking about staff housing since I've known Curtis. And so Curtis has something to say about it, and he doesn't have that opportunity if he's not included in that random sample. Phil?
For those of us who don't know what you're talking about, can you tell what it is you're talking about?
So East Hill Plaza is a distant development site for the university. No. I'm talking about in terms of length of time. It was in 2008, 2007, 2008. It was a little bit more front and center. Some of the economic challenges and downturn, some call it, created some challenges for that. But it's sort of reemerged, and what they're looking to do is either create rentals, townhomes that folks can buy, that would target either staff, young faculty, less of a grad student, but you know there might be some grad student thrown in there, similar to the what's the Honest is it Honest up in Honest not Honest Lane, not Honest. What's the one just behind East Hill Plaza?
Nope.
Where the new houses? That's a Cornell project. Cornell owns those, and Cornell's selling those homes. You know, one of the things Vijay and I brought up was. The realtor. So I don't think it's something that's like Cornell selling houses. You know what I mean? It's more of like Cornell has multiple things that go on that are business ventures, enterprise type things. And so I know that's Cornell land, and it was a Cornell sort of acting as a developer. Cornell's not the builder. Cornell's, you know, I think just the developer of that space. Yeah, and I don't know if it is it with that stretch specifically, or is it with the next housing development that they. So here's the bottom line. It's a very confusing topic that none of us really know a lot about, and it's something that Mary suggested, you know, because I'm forgetting his name now, in real estate. The guy who's in charge of Cornell Real Estate is retiring at the end of this year, and so they're currently undergoing a search to fill that position. Tom Lavigne, yeah. So when that position gets filled, inviting that new person here, and maybe bringing Q along as well, because that person reports up to Q, to have a staff housing discussion, is definitely something we're trying to do. My first question, though, was, did you all receive the survey? There was only a couple people who did.
Step one. You, at one of his gatherings, did a presentation to his staff that I was at, and part of that presentation was like a map and kind of like the drawings in terms of what they're thinking about. So they've got stuff already that they can share.
So I think maybe we invite Q and Tom to start, just to push the issue, because I told Mary, I said, you know, we want to be a part of this. And we don't want to sit on the sidelines while this all happens. And the EA was just sort of like, hey, we got this cool thing going on. So I think we tried to really assert ourselves in that process. And I know she really tried to advocate that it went out to all staff. So I will follow back up with an email to her and let her know that 3 out of the 19 around the table actually got it.
Or knew what was going on, yeah.
I think
you
get correct. There was a secondary correction email,
but there was an email.
Did
I
you have
it?
Can you forward it to me?
There was an email then even saying if you would like to be involved and you'd like to know more about the housing and the survey initiative, please contact housing_study@cornell.edu.
Can you send me that?
Yeah.
Who got the survey? Do you know if you have the email that had the survey? Could you forward that to me too? Just so that I can.
I forwarded the correction one because the first one said faculty that was sent to staff and then they corrected it.
Could you send me both of those? Just if you guys could send me. If you could send me those, that way I can share those with Mary as a follow up to our discussion, because this seems like it was really a debacle.
Yeah. Because Mary looked at us and was like, I'm confused. Why didn't you all get it? And we're like, we
get what? All right, so
they're mindful of the cost of housing, et cetera, better than they were for the child care center.
So this is
affordable for everyone.
And that's a great point, because I asked Mary, I said, you know, are these homes going to be at Cornell Market? Because Ithaca market rate, because Ithaca, the median home price is $220,000, right? Which instantly excludes certain bands and below, right? And certain bands and above. So it creates a real challenge, because if you're going to sell them to be competitive in the market, you're really not going to, but what she said, it's not going to be a subsidized housing. So there's a balance, and I'd like to find out how in their economic model they're going to achieve that balance. Because if they can do that, that's going to be a game changer for development in the city.
Well, I mean, we've asked. Did we not at one of our meetings, we said how many of our group even lives in Ithaca?
Yeah, who lives in Ithaca, the city of Ithaca? You get free housing.
I live on the campus. Oh, I pay for it.
Who lives in the town?
So
the town is a donut around the city. Think of the city as a donut hole, and the town is the sort of the outer ring.
No, Lansing.
You're Lansing.
But I wouldn't if I lived only on my income. I mean, I'll outside for the city.
Yeah. It's incredibly difficult.
Yeah.
And I think that's the challenge, is how are we going to make this feel like it was accessible to all? And the other thing is, if there's great housing that's going to go up, the number of offers that could come in, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And then you drive the price up without even trying. So it's a real tough thing, and it may not be affordable to all, but if that's the case, we need to say that.
Yeah.
Right.
We need to lead with that, rather than.
The child care center, when it first opened, you know, I had staff that was extremely excited about it. They just dropped their children off and they come to work and no worries.
Like the A-Lot.
It would take 3 paychecks, mm-hmm. 3 of the paychecks to pay for daycare. I mean, everything.
It's almost double what I pay
for the five persons in Washington.
Curtis.
The one thing I would say is about the housing situation. I know at the diversity community meeting, we have been talking about that too, because of the high turnover with staff of color, a lot of it's being contributed to the housing cost here in Ithaca. And as we know that there's about to be a generation about to retire, a younger generation is coming in that are now on two people income.
Yeah.
That are single and stuff like that, and you can't afford the housing here.
And I think it was last year.
So I think HR knows, but it's an issue, I think, affects so much more of the back end. That's why I was in a big job, because I'm one of those people, like, I like my job, I like it, but I can't afford to live here.
Yeah,
let alone trying to buy a house, to put yourself in a better financial position, right, where you're building equity, where you're making an investment somewhere long term. If you're constantly renting, Cornell as an employer doesn't have a sustainable model.
Yeah.
mean, I work here, my husband works here, we drive an hour to get here. Because you can't afford it up here.
I think that's why majority of people live outside.
And then they run around and cut all the buses.
Yeah. That's why I moved out of it. Because I couldn't afford it.
Well, I think that what happens when graduate housing goes offline is graduate students start to compete with young professionals here at Cornell, you know, because I would put Curtis and myself, Curtis, if I may, in that same we live in the same apartment complex with grad students. So we start to then compete with rooms and, well, you know, I can maybe pay this for so long because it's only 4 or 5 years. You know, for us, it's our life, it's our livelihood. So that does have a ripple effect in the economy.
Greg, was Ned at the meeting yesterday, at the UA meeting?
Yeah.
Ned from CIC? Okay, because one of the problems that the Campus Infrastructure Committee had was that Q has been launching things, and Scorton, you know, even when Scorton released the bus, the PCAT memo, and then Q's housing thing, the CIC wasn't a part of that conversation at all, and we're still not a part of that conversation. And so the shared governance is not really sharing.
So,
or they're not being shared with us. Yeah, exactly.
So with the CIC specifically, yes, that is correct. With other shared governance bodies, they have been included in that discussion. There was an oversight, and Gina admitted it yesterday, so I don't feel like I'm throwing Gina under the bus. But Gina mentioned that when the list came, she forgot to put the CIC for that transportation-specific issue.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where that lapse in the shared governance inclusion came from. And then the second piece with the housing was I had gotten an email back in the summer about, hey, want to just sort of start the conversation about this housing study. And then I got one that day, and when I responded, it said, hey, this is great, you know, excited, we'll get together with the EA and share this. It was, well, we're going to hold off for a second. So then it like went backwards. So both of these topics that we've been talking about, it wasn't done well, is sort of the bottom line.
So is Upperman going to send out a new email?
I have no idea, because okay. We're doing our due diligence. So
okay.
I will encourage her to do so.
Right.
I'm sure she'll want to, because she seemed pretty,
yeah.
I said that all the staff were going to get an email. So.
While she was eating chips.
Yeah. Yeah. That's off the record. you're like, I got that.
Well, it also details how many people stay in this area, thanks to Cornell, and how much more it is projected for each year. So, that, yeah.
Yeah, how do you define the area?
Hmm?
How do they define the area?
Right. And that's going to, when they're taxed on that housing, and generate those taxes back into Thompson County, then they're going to really be contributing a lot more, obviously.
Yeah, I think the first thing is, getting back to Mary about the survey, having somebody come in and talk about staff housing. I think we can invite Q and Tom Novigny, even though Tom is on his way out, it's still probably beneficial. So maybe we can move that up on our meeting schedule, if possible. Or bump some of the other question marks out. And then we'll sort of go from there. The next thing, if I may move on, to the President Mary's visit. Also, Glenn Alschuler will be here as the part two to that, to talk about the sesquicentennial celebrations and things like that. Any topics we would like David or Mary to come prepared to address? Curtis.
So I'm on the wellness advisory board, and one of the things that came up there was they are very appreciative of President Scorton's address, but one of the questions that came up was in regards to the response to the staff engagement survey. Remember we asked for those 3 hours or 2 hours, and then he said no, but he remains committed to finding a solution, and since he's on his way out, how is he going to maintain that commitment with the new president coming in?
conversation we planning to have with this transition in order to continue that dialogue versus flex and wellness time?
Can you
that's my question, Tim. I don't know how to phrase that into a specific question.
So I was going to say, can you, because I'm unclear about what.
So, okay, remember we had a staff engagement survey.
Yep.
As a result of the staff engagement was wellness issues. One recommendation our committee made was that each staff gets, I think, 3 hours a week of release time to do.
Oh, the recommendation.
Yeah, well, 3 hours for wellness time to be used. Whatever. And then the president basically, when he wrote back, said no, that we remain committed to the idea and working with department chairs. Still, since he's on his way out, how is he maintaining that commitment? How's the transition look like? And what are specific things that we as the EEA do to put forward? Exactly back to what we're providing.
So I think that's a great question, and I think one of the bigger umbrella question in that is how will we ensure the milestones or the open items that we have with you as the employee community, how can we ensure that those are transitioned to President-elect Garrett? How can some of the priorities that you've set that the staff are whatever that they hold on to, how can those be transitioned? And I know that all of the senior leadership are working on transition type documents for President-elect. I know the employee survey was part of there's some information and part of the request for Mary Opperman's sort of transition memo, with a lot of that sort of stuff in front and center. So I think that the transition in general, but then talking as it relates to personal leave and things like that, is sort of the secondary tier to that question. Any other questions, thoughts?
He had brought up in his presidential address, he thought we were pretty much at our limit, that we had gone on staff cuts pretty much beyond the limit of providing the caliber of work that we're looking for at Cornell. So that's indicative that we're going to start hiring more, is the question. And also, current staff, do they have the time now in their workday to take advantage of some of the benefits that are offered to them at Cornell, such as educational benefits, like taking a class or something like that? Do they get supervisory approval to do such or enter the Cornell degree program? I saw there was a lot less graduates 2014, spring 2014, than there had been in some years past. I don't know if HR does any studies on that.
I mean, you do have to have supervisory approval.
Correct. But you also have to have enough people on the workforce in order to do, provide coverage,
Yeah.
Can you even take a fifth day?
Well, then if you're on a temporary status, are you even eligible?
So who runs the...
No, I know you're not.
Who runs the...
The person who does the day-to-day is Maureen Roll. It's part of Alan Bishop.
So would Alan have data like that?
Yes, yeah, so everyone in the wider app has to go through Alan Bishop.
Okay, so that's a good topic.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I mean, he actually made a point of mentioning that.
He did.
That he felt that in some cases, so we don't know that the part had gone a little too far.
And he had some insightful things to say at the Board of Trustees meeting about the staff community, and was really passionate about the message he delivered around that. And I asked Mary how we could get him to share that information, and she said that she would request that he either share that information here, but it's good. I mean, and it was really heartfelt, meaningful things that I think will be great to help even us at the EEA level set a direction and a course of things to focus on, because of he just really articulated, I think, where the staff is and what the staff needs very well. So hopefully he can bring up some of those topics. But because we haven't asked for permission, I can't really say them. Any other topics?
think I would ask about the housing situation. Yeah. I mean, if this is something that they've been working on, it's been put on the burner, it's at your level, your relationship with Town Gownsings, how are we working with community partners, the City of Ithaca, local developers, to provide housing opportunities for staff members here? And if not, what could we be doing now that you're on your way out and you can say whatever you want?
That goes hand in hand. I mean, if you're trying to then, and we're going to increase our staff numbers,
how are you going to bring
if you're going to bring them in, but where are they supposed to live? Are they commuting? I mean, it all goes hand in hand.
Yep. It's not an easy place to run.
Probably what areas of growth he would see. Because he said that some areas, you know, they still not be up to par. And then we've had a lot of building across campus and, you know, expansion in some ways. So can we expect that staff are going to grow in those areas? Can we identify any of that? Like,
that's a good question. Great question. Couple more, one or two more, anything?
Budget. Well, we've heard the budget is very balanced, you know, with the very
fine line.
$2 million in this next budget or this current budget? That's what it's balanced to, he said.
Yeah.
And then I read that
rounding errors.
More money than we ever have.
Who is?
Yeah.
Since the stock market fell, you know, we got all those extra stocks.
Yeah, he had some really insightful things to say at the UA meeting last night about, you know, because of the idea of different energy, renewable, what's the cooling or the heating, geothermal heating. You know, somebody brought that up. And, you know, it's, he's cautious to make some of these large capital commitments to certain things because it does mean cuts. It does mean changes to how we fund financial aid, what you know, when, as tuition rises, so does the financial aid need. So all of these things that it's very complicated. So it's, while endowments may be doing the best they ever have, are the costs that we're incurring also the best they've ever been? It may be more than we've ever seen. So I think that there's some more information that we need to get for some of those questions, which is why we asked.
What was your question about budget in terms of...
So just, I mean, a couple of things I'm thinking about. You know, a couple of years ago, there was the commitment to not build anything without having all the money in hand. Are we holding true to that?
He brought that up yesterday at the UA. He said, we don't take on debt for buildings. But I think those are good things to have him reiterate here of some of his financial commitments. What are they?
You know, just thinking in terms of budget, you know, raises have been very slim. You know, where are we in terms of, you know, meeting kind of the community or national average in terms of salaries for staff? Are we up or are we falling behind?
Good questions. Curtis?
This is not a hassle, but I think if we have time, I can tell you one. A question about, like, a retrospect looking back when we did the bank and we hired the outside consulting, do you think those recommendations and implementations have all been successful?
That's
good. Very reflective.
Very
love
good.
It.
Sorry, that's one good. More time. I heard something about referring to the old
original. No, so referring
original.
To the bank report.
Did it help? Did it make the impact we wanted?
Have they been successful, or would you do something differently?
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of the important impact is that.
So from a process question, BJ has done a nice job capturing all of this. Would I hope? Because I looked over what I'm writing and I stopped. I guess it's all on here. If we ask him or propose these questions to him in his briefing and then sort of allow him to sort of walk through them, are you okay with that format, or would you prefer to ask these questions? I'd definitely give them beforehand regardless if, but what he will do is walk down his briefing list, or we can say, well, Curtis had a question about X. We want to just let him sort of walk through it.
And I think we mainly want to start with our thanks for them having such an interaction with our group.
Absolutely. You know what? I almost, I, his birthday is the day after our meeting.
Can we give him some lessons?
So we're going to get some cupcakes. I wanted to bring a card today
to get
everybody to sign it. What?
No. I don't know.
You think he's it is his birthday, so I will have some sort of happy birthday. Maybe we can pass it in our office mail. You know what we can do? We can print a list of stickers and you can just send it around. Let's see if we can make the 19 person cycle in 2 weeks. All right, so anyways. We're gonna move on from that discussion. If anybody has any other questions, they can email BJ and myself, and we'll get those included in the briefing. We'll need to send that out by the end of the week, so don't wait. Friday will be the last day to get them to us.
Friday at 10:30. Yes. I say that because I did have a student email me at 10:40 after I told them 10:30, and I said no. So that happened today.
BJ drove the
line. It's Friday.
All right. So then, Phil brought up the understanding constituency discussion, and I think it's a good one that we continue. I didn't know if BJ or Bill or anyone wants to sort of jump in on what we want to talk about. I do want to sort of maybe take about 10 minutes for this, and then have 10 minutes for the new business.
I guess these two things kind of roll together, but to make a more overarching statement, the new business that you see down there is resolutions and action items. And so Greg and I were discussing different things that have been brought up. We've had, again, a series of great speakers, and I think everyone really enjoyed hearing people come in and learning a lot more about things happening at the university. But we just want to make sure that that information isn't lost and that we're doing something about it. And I think we were looking at the idea of we are all busy staff members, so asking us to do more time outside of these meetings is somewhat prohibitive on our own staff time. So the idea of taking time out from meetings and carving a executive working session, kind of what we did at the beginning of the year, to say, here's all this information, can we process it, and at the end of that, like, maybe 30-minute session, either come up with a resolution or action things that we can do so we're accomplishing things, but also not necessarily taking more time out of what you're all doing as staff members. Before we start talking about these kinds of things, does that sound like something that is fine? Would we rather have meetings be more devoted towards presentations, or is it okay to carve out this time to do things? I ask that because, again, if that is something that we want to do, I would then ask that as we prepare, like, materials to be sent out ahead of time, that people then come with the understanding that there will be, like, 30 minutes where we're not going to be just sitting around discussing issues or things that are coming up. It'll be, let's please divide up into these small groups or working on whatever resolution crafting or whatever it is we need to do, but just building in time so we can do things as opposed to talking about doing things. So does that seem like a good thing? I know. Again, this isn't a yes or no. It's more just what do we want to do? Yeah.
Well, I think it's good to have the nice mixture. You know, you have our informational meetings to learn about what's going on, and then carve out some time that we could, obviously not like every meeting, but a couple of meetings every semester that we have come out tonight, so we can divide and conquer.
Okay. Michelle, Zoom.
I don't know why we need to break into small groups. Why can't we just make actions as a group?
Yeah.
We can. We just have to make sure we come away with actions.
Right.
Because that's the tough part sometimes is the collective.
Okay. Cool. So that being said, so these two things are kind of part of that action item too. So we had discussed a little bit at our retreat being there, talking about understanding our constituency and what that looks like. And so, Bill, I don't know if you have more specific questions.
Well, I sit on the communications committee, and part of our charge, I guess, moving forward is sort of branding and reaching out to people around the community, our constituents. It came up in that meeting that many of us don't know who our constituents are. I did a little research on the website, on the Cornell website, trying to look up the what units, because everybody says, oh, you know, it's part of the units and this unit, that unit, that. So I Googled or searched on Cornell University units, and nothing comes up. There's no definitive list of what units are. So to reference, you know, within a unit or whatever is sort of kind of vague as for a branding. If we want to reach out to people, we need to know who we are reaching out to.
Like org charts, in a sense.
Yeah, and I don't know who my constituents are. I run into people and I talk with them and I bring their issues to
here.
But, you know, that's very few out of the 8,000 or so people on campus that work for Cornell.
Is it, Linda, is there any confidential information that we could be shared, that could be shared with us confidentially? I don't know if it's confidential or not, that, you know, maybe the number of women, the number of men, the number of, you know, age segmentation.
Yeah, public information.
It
yeah,
is.
Yes. Mary Hopper put it up to our permanent action plan, the job, you know, for staff, and it is our composition information right now on that.
Where would that be?
If you go on and you Google on
if you dig real deep.
Affirmative action plan.
Yeah.
Right on the, and then, so then you're going to get to one window and then it says, you know, there'll be a highlight thing that you click here to go to current affirmative action. Click on that and then you'll see the staff job group analysis. If you click on that and go all the way to the bottom, it shows what our composition looks like for those who are considered staff. But I'm thinking there's about 26 or 27 units on campus, being colleges and units. Some of them are very tiny, you know, less than 20 people, and then some that are large. And I obviously have access to all the information if I would want to find out what very comfortable with, but I could cut to say, here's all the employees in these different units and provide deployment.
Or even knowing how many.
Oh, how many?
You know what I mean?
I don't think that's
how many fall in those groups, so we can see where can we make the biggest impact. What if we can get the 20 person unit on board right away? Right, that's 20 new people, and get that low hanging fruit, and then approach CALS or the vet school or arts and sciences that are a little bit bigger.
How many and where they work, so that we can contact them.
So alumni affairs and development.
Office of the unit, promos office of the unit, university council of the unit, and those are some of the kind of smaller units.
Okay.
And then you have your alumni colleges, all of those units, and then you have, you know, you have the public safety services,
student academic services,
academic services,
alumni affairs and development. Kinds of things from just kind of an organizational standpoint. So it sounds like there are like college-defined things by unit, so that's something we can look at. The reverse of that, because I would just want to make sure all voices are being heard, if we divide up by units, what are some constituency groups on campus that you feel would not be represented by units?
Everyone is. So what? Well, no, everybody has to either report to a dean or a vice president. It ultimately, everybody's in a college or unit. Because there's nobody out there that's just sort of working for, you know what I mean? Just sort of working for themselves. What? Yeah, but doesn't she report to David? Kind of. then she would be a unit.
It would be very fun.
Yeah. It just seems like once it's pulled together, it might be wonderful information to put on the EA website.
Yeah. Do a story about the...
Well, the people know.
Yeah. Curtis?
Well, I would say maybe what might be useful about this is the suggestion Lisa made or we mentioned about the Mary Ogden in the spring and the meeting with her. So maybe that might be helpful in terms of forming how that discussion might go.
Yeah?
Like, who are we? I think that might be our first.
Yeah, who are we?
I mean,
yeah.
There are broad numbers, but I think
Curtis is probably tough. If you go on IRC, .dc.cornell.edu and you go on to university fast book, it does break up counts by college, counts by so it the snapshot was taken last November, so it's a year in effect to about to do this November data pool. That's public.
Can you share that link?
Yeah.
On the
EA?
Can,
we'll be able to get all that information by headcount and everything off of this.
That's helpful.
That's great.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna send this to you.
So, you know, I think any issue we tackle is complex, right?
Yeah.
This one of how is probably the most complex issue that we have to face is how do we hit every corner? Where are the corners? How do we get there? What does it mean to interact with us at different corners of the campus? So it's a challenge. And I think trying to understand a little bit more of the data first can maybe help drive some decision making of where can we put our resources? Can we get the low? I don't mean low hanging fruit in a negative term, but I mean sort of the easy wins, the small units, make an impact there, learn from that, and then make an impact into the big units.
You know, it's funny, out of pulling all of these and even having just now the total Cornell workforce, headcounts, and so on, all of them, the ones I've been quickly breezing, they separate the academic staff. In all of them, every single one of them, they're not counted with us, which is quite funny because they keep wanting us to address whether or not we're going to have them. But in every site I've just pulled up, diversity, the account, the unit, academic staff separate.
Is it academic staff
or
academic
is it professional?
Academic professionals.
Yeah. So is that lectures?
Yep. That's the lectures, research
is it faculty?
No.
Faculty is staff.
Okay.
Yep.
Gotcha. All right.
It's that pool.
That pool that
pool.
We've been in.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Ulysses?
Structure as it exists right now is about to get into the next year. Because we just have to recycle these. A lot of people think in that time, we've changed every 10 or so years. And the structure that we do now was put in place at a time that it worked. Mm-hmm. And from all the protests and such, not only the undergraduate class, but also the graduate, and even coming to UA now, when the U, when they bring in the UA, so who knows what's wrong. No shame. People are dissatisfied largely with the power of the political structure. And I think it is due time to change it, especially now we have a new president coming in. She's coming from a totally different system, a system that, honestly, thoroughly, their population is much more engaged in their campus, their business process, and all that type of stuff. So you might want to roll her into this conversation with the trustees now, especially if during the meetings that are going to come up in March, to get their take on, and again, we'll have to connect to the other assembly leadership, just to figure out how you guys can restructure overall shared governance model. So before you, it's great to find out who's in your constituency by all means, but before you try to drag people into a house, kind of clean up the house a little bit, and figure out exactly what it's sleeping that actually sell their agency. Right now I wouldn't know what to come deal with if I had a problem. I'm not sure exactly what I would want to do to that.
And I think that's, I mean, you said it, right? I mean, it's exactly what it is, and it's great perspective because you are who we represent. Sir, you specifically, you metaphorically are who we represent. So I think that, you know, one of the things we've been discussing is charter changes,
mm-hmm.
Looking at retooling that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something we've necessarily brought out to the floor yet.
I'm quite sure how it would look like.
Because we don't know what necessarily to propose yet. And then rather than just sort of beat it into submission and have it really be complex and messy and bring something that we can actually have as a starting point or a basis, I think the idea of changing the structure of shared governance is one that we should consider. I sort of had this harebrained idea with Gina yesterday as we were sitting there listening, because I asked President Horton a question at the UA meeting about, and then we'll wrap it up, it's great to talk to administrators, but then there's another level that we can't infiltrate. And that's the dean, director level, right? So we've had this conversation up here, and it's great, and yeah, let's do it. Let's send some emails and get people on board, and then at the dean, director level, it stops. How do we get it into the colleges, and how do we get it into the units? And he talked about more localized shared governance bodies in colleges and units. Either they be little mini essays, UAs, whatever they may be, advisory groups. So a thought that I had was, and I'd love to explore this at a meeting sometime, is what about employee advisory councils in each unit or college, right? Just like there's student advisory councils, just like there's faculty. You know, some colleges are strong and already have them. Others are not. And then what if there was a representative from those college and unit advisory groups that came to the UA, and then there was a portion of UA members that were elected from the campus as a whole, and some sort of a hybrid, right? Is that a way to, one, get the EA in the units, get the HR professionals, get the deans and vice presidents actually listening and doing stuff about it, and then when a representative from college says, you know, my dean's just really not cooperative, and it's really a struggle, then that's a great way for us to say, okay, Dean, time to come to the EA meeting. Just like you would say, okay, Susan, okay, Kent, time to come. You know, we got to put the heat on, and really give us some bite. Because right now, our structure, we have bark, but no bite. The SA has a little bit of bite because there's some chartered oversight. The EA doesn't really have chartered oversight. It has charter advisory. So how do we give it some real meat is, I think, what we'll struggle to compose. And it won't be easy. It will be difficult. It won't be what we've always done. We'll have to think differently. I don't want to lose sight of what it has been and what we've done, but we need to think differently a little bit. And those conversations are coming, but we're trying to slowly introduce them so that it's not sort of the shock and awe of change and overwhelm, but gradually over the year, 18 months, 2 years, 3 years, whatever it takes, gradually improve on the process and the systems.
I really love that idea, and one of the things that I was thinking about with that was when I first came here as working as the head of HR for CIC, we had our annual survey, our survey, and we had a staff group that was responsible for looking at the results of it and making suggestions to senior management and liaise with senior management all the time. And I'm almost wondering if we could have more impact with the staff survey if each unit came up with a staff group that was responsible for taking their own unit's results and working with their leadership on implementing things at the local level that makes sense to them, with there being a representative from each of those as part of the EA. And that might, because I know one of the things Mary kept saying is, well, you know, we'd like more staff on these groups that are looking at all these issues that we've identified. And so if it was more set up that way where they have these
Well, and I think what this also helps to sort of piggyback on is the time away from work for shared governance. If this is something we can get as a focus for every vice president, every dean, that, you know, and I think we should put a resolution or something together to even have them maybe start an advisory group in their own college, right, regardless if they really report back to the EA, of even just 5 to 6 employees, right, that represent a spectrum. They can have more or less, but at least 5 to 6, that it really gets to then in people's sort of, not necessarily in their specific job description, but as part of their job to meet with their dean, meet with their school or unit senior leadership on a, you know, once every other month, once every quarter, once a month, whatever it may be, basis. So those are the kind of things I think we need to be thinking about and how we can start to really push some of the thoughts we have into action and push back on Mary and David and everyone else at the senior leadership and also the college and unit leadership level. How can we get them to change? We have to suggest the change. We just can't suggest or state the problem. We have to state and be and advocate and legislate the change. What?
What you're proposing is basic federalism. That's really it. If you're saying the EA is going to be about broad policy, then it will be up to the individual unit to specify, to shape the federal policy as they see fit in their life, which is fine. You just still need to identify
what are those
policies you all are contributing to those.
No, just 75 a year. So, is there a motion to adjourn based on time?
Yes.
All right. Have a great day, everybody.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.